Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new The Cyber Society podcast. Let's face it, the future is now. We're living in a connected cyber society, and we need to stop ignoring it or pretending that it's not affecting us. Join us as we explore how humanity arrived at this current state of digital reality and what it means to live amongst so much technology and data. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Black Cloak provides concierge cybersecurity protection to corporate executives and high net worth individuals to protect against hacking, reputational loss, financial loss, and the impact of a corporate data breach. Learn more at blackcloak.io. RSA Security offers business-driven security solutions that provide organizations with a unified approach to managing digital risk that hinges on integrated visibility, automated insights, and coordinated actions. Learn more at rsa.com.
What the heck was it pressing? And Marco.
Sean, what's going on?
We are multi-continental today.
I love that. We should always be like that.
We should always be like that. We try to be like that, and we're fortunate to be that way today. And that's thanks in part to innovation and technology.
Well, I don't think we could have ever had this conversation that we are about to have if it wasn't for technology, because as you say, we are really completely different parts of the world. Let's jump right into it. We're talking about innovation, which is obviously a very wide, wide topic.
Yeah, and I guess the point of today's conversation is what drives innovation? What gives us humans the desire and the drive to do something different and make something new? Is it out of passion? Is it out of necessity? Is it out of a political or wartime situation? And it's probably that and much, much more. And as usual, we might have some thoughts on the topic, but there are others who have deep knowledge and an understanding, even experiences on particular topics, and today we have two guests joining us, and we're going to get into it. They're from different continents at the moment, and actually different, hailing from different places at the moment as well. We have Amanda Obadike and Baiba Jiga. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you so much for having us. Looking forward to having this conversation.
Yeah, thank you, Sean and Marco, for having us on your platform.
Yeah, this is gonna be really fun. And so, to give folks a sense of who you are and the perspective you bring with you for today's chat, a few words about yourself and what you're up to, Amanda.
Okay. Yeah. So, my name is Amanda Obidike, and I'm from Lagos, Nigeria. Nigeria is in the western part of Africa, and I serve as the strategy lead of STEMI Makers Africa. Now, STEMI Makers Africa is also passionate about innovation. It's STEM, the I in STEMI is innovation. So we address the leaky unemployment pipeline, the underrepresentation of young women and girls in STEM, and also trying to integrate STEM education into underserved communities, especially in classrooms. So we are doing this to ensure that young Africans are well experienced for the growing and changing workforce. So that's a little about the work I do. And I'm so happy, you know, I'm just so excited. I can't wait to, you know, talk much more about this intended topic.
Perfect. And Baiba.
Thank you. Yeah, my name is Baiba, and I'm the founder of Lakehouse Consulting, where I work with organizations on their predominantly diversity, equity, and inclusion strategy and initiatives. I'm also involved in some European projects. So my consultancy works in both the UK and EU. So ultimately all living and breathing everything diversity. So when I work with my clients on topics as be it digital transformation, innovation, it's always looking through the lens of people. I'm also host of the 21st Century Change Agent podcast and a blogger and contributor on, again, topics concerning diversity, inclusion, and equity. And I'm also on advisory board for Wonder Women Tech Foundation, which is much closer to both of you, Mark and Sean. It's from Long Beach, California. So it's a charity there. And alongside the founder, Lisa May, and the team, we are working on raising the voices of the marginalized and underrepresented, and equally raising the awareness of those in power and in more privilege about these topics. So that's my work.
Love it.
Wonderful. So today, the goal on this channel that we call the Cyber Society, it's going to be focused on, I guess, technology, innovation, and of course, because of your experience and specialization, the importance of diversity in all this process, which is a never-ending process. I guess innovation has been existing since the dawn of humanity. And another thing that's been existing since the dawn of humanity has been war, conflict, and all those fun stuff that, according to many, it's the biggest driver in innovation. It's kind of like that Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, where Mr. Hyde is, you know, bringing bad situation, but that also ultimately force discoveries. And, you know, it's kind of dark, I'll say, but I'd like to start with that. So if we look back into history, what are, on your experience and your study and your opinion, the real driver of innovation? Let's start with Amanda.
Okay. Yes. Thank you. So something inspired me, you know, when I thought about this topic. And presently now, much of the technology that we depend upon today began as a kind of competition, you know, to be at the forefront or as a kind of military technology. If you look back in history, you know, the way the telegraph was invented, the railroads, the original computer, which we know that it was used to encode and decode traffic, which consisted mainly of communications between the German high command and the naval officers. I went to the National Museum, War Museum in Abia State, that's in the southern region of Nigeria. And I was so shocked because it was where they had to put in war tanks and all, and it was this war museum, you know, it was initiated when Nigeria had the civil war. There is a civil war we call the Biafran War. It was you know, a group of people in Nigeria who said they no longer want to be in Nigeria, they want to stay on their own. Now I was amazed because you know, the government has at that time tried to frustrate their needs by saying we are going to ensure that food don't come to you, supplies don't come to you and all. But what these Biafrans, we call them Biafrans, what they created, what they invented during that time, I wondered. I said, we don't have certain kind of technologies now. We are so concerned now that young people are just so redundant. And I said to myself that maybe war really initiates people to think more, to be innovative, because now you have to, the typical thing in your head is you have to survive. And, you know, once you want to survive, or once you're thinking of surviving, you have to create ways or strategies to ensure that you indeed survive. So I was saying, war, is it war or growth or competition that, you know, should be able to drive technology advancement? Yes, war drives technology advancement, but you and I know that there are disadvantages to it. So that was what made me to think about this topic. But I would also let Beiba share her views on, you know, personal or, you know, general historic matters that have advanced technology over time.
Thanks, Amanda. And, you know, and I agree with, you know, everything that you've said in terms of how war contributes to to pushing the technology out because it has a very specific purpose. In that case, it's military technology. It's not necessarily has got people in mind. It's not there for humanity. It's not there for, you know, a greater good. It's all about warfare. And, you know, and even if we, you know, think about today, you know, obviously we are not in war, we are in war with the virus, but actually, you know, how much that has done for, you know, innovation, or at least the digital space. So for instance, you know, if we go back early 2000, so March 2000 is when most of the world so started going into the first lockdowns. And you know, for people to be able to engage and keep doing the work, so I'm talking, you know, mainly, you know, knowledge workers, not necessarily frontline workers, they needed to be connected, you know, with teams, you know, to ultimately do their work. And digital transformation has been on everyone's agenda for years, and it's always been on the next 3-year, 5-year roadmap. And all the consultants out there, you know, management consultants and technology consultants out there, will know the pain that they have been pushing and knocking on the doors for company for years, for probably a decade, saying, you need to prioritize digital transformation. You need to prioritize, you need to invest, you need to do, you need to do. But that roadmap never really accelerated at the speed that was needed. And then it all happened overnight, because suddenly there was this urge to get people connected. And I was involved in a digital project in the company that I was with at that time. And it all happened overnight. Within 2 weeks, we had everything out, everyone connected. I mean, everyone was connected overnight. But what I mean, you know, in terms of policy, in terms of security, from cybersecurity point of view, it all was, you know, done and dusted within 1-2 weeks. And I'm sure you guys have seen as well the memes that have gone around, you know, the internet and social media about, you know, who accelerated your digital transformation. A, your CTO, B, your CIO, or C, coronavirus. And everyone knows what that was.
Yeah.
Interesting. And I want to talk about this, and I don't know, maybe Amanda can jump on it. Because I remember we had a conversation with J.J. Snow, she's part of the U.S. Air Force, and she made an interesting point that I hadn't really thought about. And a lot of the activities and innovations and goals for the military isn't to engage in war. It's actually quite the opposite. It's to prevent war and maintain peace. And with that, I'm wondering, do we have to think differently about how we innovate? Is it not just innovating around technology, but innovating our minds and our thoughts and our environment and our surroundings and our society?
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, in leading countries, for example, like the USA, technology advancements in technology took place in, you know, applied mathematics, computer science, electronics. You know, recently I was reading on how, you know, this facial surgery got started. You know, it was just during the time when the war broke out, and there was a surgeon that needed to, you know, put people together. I'm just saying that presently now we have become very complacent, and we are concerned rather now with making money. Like I read one survey that the American youth now appear to be turned off by, for example, math and science, and are more concerned with how much money they can earn with self-actualization. So the innovation space is really going down. I'm just saying, I was just citing examples that innovation or technology was really strong where there was conflict, or maybe they want to avoid conflict or war. But we can rather channel this innovation, you know, for good. For example, like in setting out a digital kind of structure and all. I was, sorry, I don't want to be too political. I was sharing with a couple of friends of mine on certain things that the government wanted to clamp down on. Now, in Nigeria, for example, they've clamped down on cryptocurrency. And I was asking myself, I was telling my friends, I said, why can't the government think about ways to, you know, help young people, help them to be more innovative, because trust me, cryptocurrency has really helped a number of youths. Now you can trade, you know, easily, seamlessly, you can make money and all. But now they are trying to frustrate that avenue. It's so demoralizing. It's not making people to be more innovative. It's not making people to be more innovative in their businesses or in their organizations. So it's not like a war per se, but it's you know, how innovation has helped them or helps countries in you know, during wartime periods or conflicts, avoiding conflicts.
So let's switch gear here, and Baiba, I'm gonna bounce it back to you, because you brought the COVID as a emergency situation that it accelerated digital transformation in function of a need to resolve a problem. So war is a state of trying to prevail on someone else, and there is war and there is warfare. So we can be in war without being actually acting in a warfare.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like that tension that exists. Now, if you look at the Cold War, for example, where there was not actual fighting, but it created a lot of innovation that then it trickled down into society. And that happened, as you say, with the COVID. So maybe it's the challenge that whatever that challenge is that stimulate innovation and technology innovation again into be better. But I guess the point is, how can we harvest this power of, oh shit, we have to resolve a problem, and not having the need for that? Can it be just driven, in your opinion, by an interest in just giving better life to everybody on this planet? I'm being very idealistic right now, but I'd like to go there with you.
Listen, that is the million-dollar question. It really is. And a lot of people are asking it right now, because even if we, because the problem with that is the distribution of technology. Because, you know, if we have a look at how technologically advanced, you know, the Western world is compared to how evenly distributed technology, and not only technology, but basic things as the internet, the electricity, is in some parts of Africa, part of South Asia, you know, where people don't have access to these basic things. You know, they don't have access to, therefore, they don't have access to education. You know, so that's, you know, first thing, you know, the distribution of technology. You know, another example is, for instance, you know, at the moment we are building this new world through artificial intelligence. And we have trailblazers as Google and Facebook, you know, leading the way in that. However, again, the question is, what kind of world are we building? Are we building, you know, this AI for the humanity? For it to be evenly, again, distributed across the world, and especially places that need it the most? Or is it, again, for the wealthy, for commercialization? And again, you know, that's a million-dollar question. What are you actually going to do with the with this piece of technology? And the thing is that, you know, this space, AI, again, is such a still raw and new piece of innovation that is not regulated. You know, the internet has been around for decades now, and it's not regulated. So, you know, what the questions that we need to ask ourselves is, how do we actually regulate it so we can drive and steer innovation and the technology development, but also do it for a greater good? And so far, the government is not really doing enough. And these organizations, you know, be it Google or Facebook, they can't self-regulate. So hence this, you know, million-dollar question, actually, you know, what are we building? And of course, there's amazing, you know, groups of scientists doing amazing work on AI, asking those questions, challenging, you know, challenging narratives that we have already. You know, Dr. Kanthi Hall and Dr. Stephen Cave are doing amazing work on decolonization of AI, especially to, you know, to specifically answer those questions, to make sure that in this space of AI, this virtual world that we are building, we don't bring in the same biases that we have in our current world. But for that, we need that to be regulated. either through self-regulation, either through government, either through a similar body as, you know, FDA is in the medical field. But yeah, Marco, you know, that's a million-dollar question.
And I'm going to make the question harder and then hopefully maybe simpler.
$10 million.
I'm going to make it $10 billion question. And I'm going to pass this over to Amanda, because what I'm wondering, Amanda, because Biva's talking about this and we need regulation, and she's mentioning these huge corporations and these top-notch scientists and researchers, I'm thinking, where's the little guy and the little gal in all of this, right? And I think if it's not built by a global community where everyone's represented and therefore built for the global community where everyone is using it, how do we achieve something that's meaningful for the human race versus meaningful for a Facebook or a Google, or meaningful for a particular research project that doesn't impact everybody?
Okay, yes. And, you know, that's where this point of inclusion comes in. You know, sometimes we get to see these things happen on a daily basis. Take, for example, you know, where the rich keeps getting richer, the poor keeps getting poorer. The rich now is getting very enriched, especially in a continent like Africa. So, you know, just like, you know, me and Beba, we jumped on a call 2 days ago, and she was talking about the, you know, the vaccine and all. So, you know, we've seen typical examples of where resources, opportunities for, you know, technology, it's, you know, tilts to one side of an income earner, maybe like the high income earner, and less or nothing comes to the you know, the low income earners. And we're asking ourselves, what can be done in this? It's just about you know, strengthening this our infrastructure. It could be digital infrastructure, it could be technology infrastructure that can accommodate all, irrespective of your status, because we've seen that happen countless times in a continent like Africa. Everyone knows how rich, wealthy Africa is with the resources. But, you know, externally, it's not telling, because on a yearly basis, we're still collecting loans from IMFs and all. It's so terrible. But this is the reality that we live in. It's about setting this structure. It's also about setting policies, you know, that can govern governments. You know, we have unions like African Union, ECOWAS and all, but those bodies in the continent are not really functional. It's just like a ceremonial thing. But these are, you know, agencies or organizations that ought to be putting in checks and balances to ensure that, irrespective of your status, irrespective of your role in the society, you should be able to partake of, you know, this technology advancement. So I don't know if that really responds to your question, but, you know, that's just one of my thoughts.
May I jump in as well, just to build on it? So, and I agree with what Amanda is talking about, but I think another huge part of that is education and communication. Because even if you look at how, again, you know, taking this, you know, virus as an example of how governments distribute communication in different countries and how they talk about the virus and how severe it is or isn't, you know, from, you know, America with, you know, huge numbers of people passed away during this virus, you know, the UK. And then you, for instance, go to Belarus, where, you know, Lukashenko at the beginning of the virus said, you know, just keep drinking vodka and go to sauna, you know. So this is, you know, about, we're talking about the communication that comes from media that's distributed through from governments through media to people. And in places where the internet is not as accessible, either due to the infrastructure or due to censorship, people don't have access to various other channels of information, and whatever's fed to them, they take it for the face value. So for instance, when it comes to again, you know, the vaccine, you know, we were talking, as Amanda mentioned a couple of days ago, you know, I was saying in the UK, the government has said that by June, the adult population will be vaccinated. I said, what's happening in Nigeria? She goes, no one's talking about it. So this is the uneven distribution of resources and communication and distorted communication that we are talking about. And this is uneven distribution of basic human needs and rights. But and you know, what we're talking about here. But then on the other hand, you know, we're talking about AI, you know, this sort of parallel universe that we are building, while people in this world don't have access to basic human rights and needs.
Well, as they say, the future is here, it's just not equally distributed.
That's so smart.
Somewhere is not. And I think you mentioned education, and of course, on Sean, in my opinion, it's part of one of our tagline, which is knowledge is power. And I think communication, as you said, is the key to let people access this knowledge. Unfortunately, when you control communication, you control knowledge, and when you control knowledge, you control the people. Yeah. And that's always been like that. It's not a physical war, but it's a psychological war, if you want to go there. So mm-hmm. I like to take this though, but switch it on the good note, which is going back to innovation and technology, that while it's not equally distributed, it is starting to offer opportunities to many places that before couldn't even be accessed by it. So in an ideal world, it would have been more equally distributed, and hopefully it's getting there. In reality, though, some steps has been taken. So let's maybe look at the positive things for a little bit, and how this is driving innovation, and how diverse people from different background and different part of the world are starting to be part of innovation. Who wants to take that?
Amanda, do you want to go first?
Okay, yes. Yes, so to echo what you are saying, I totally agree on, you know, the impact of education. So, you know, there's this cartoon that I watched some years ago. I can't really remember the name, but there was something the his command that, you know, that was animating it. He said... Sorry.
Yeah, no problem. We were just talking about how technology should be equal everywhere, and all of a sudden, one of us fall from from the connection.
I'm so sorry.
But go ahead. No, I'm sure you're not responsible for the internet connection there. So go for it. Start from wherever you left it.
Okay, yes. I was talking about... education, the power of knowledge, you know, and how it has helped us, you know, give better advices to whether it's key stakeholders or the government. Because now in Nigeria, for example, we have, you know, poor data infrastructure. But, you know, on a personal note, and because of the work we do, we know that we need this data to...
Well... That's,
and I think she's a really good point to make, and she just can't get to it yet.
All right, let's do you know what point is about to make?
I'm not too sure. No, we have not anyway. So no.
Well, you know, in this is the beauty of, as they would say, to be live on TV, but we are not live, but it's our conversation, and of course, we're not going to waste all of this incredible. Points that you guys have been made so far. So, you know, it's what it is. The podcast, the show must go on. So
you're going to edit it afterwards, won't you?
Yeah, we can edit it, but I have no problem in making people hear that this is what happened. So, of course, I will fix it a little bit. So let's maybe wrap it as much as we can, the three of us. And if Amanda come back, that's cool.
As Amanda was talking about education, going back to your point in terms of putting a positive spin on it, mm-hmm. I think the positive spin or a bit of a hopeful spin rather than maybe positive spin that I can put on it is probably around the opportunity that we have ahead of us. It is absolutely huge, enormous opportunity, but we just have not realized and leveraged it yet. And what I mean by that is, for instance, in terms of reskilling our workforce, providing better digital literacy and you know, investing in learning and development of our people. Because otherwise, you know, because for instance, McKinsey, they did a huge research and a huge analysis on this. And they were talking about the UK in this context. And they were talking about the fact that over the next decade, over 90% of workforce will need to be reskilled in the UK. And that there is a huge gap between the actual and the required skills. And that gap is just getting bigger and bigger, bigger with every day. And ultimately, 75% of employers would profit from reskilling their employees through productivity, through retention, through, you know, hiring, instead of, you know, getting consultant, or even better, reskilling their own internal employees rather than getting a consultant to fill in the gap or rehiring. And also, if we talk about UK, you know, Brexit has put a toll on in terms of how the UK organizations can hire from the EU. So they will have to reskill and develop their own internal talent. And this is a bit of a sort of, you know, an interesting topic, because again, you know, going back to this pandemic, so, you know, in I think it was, you know, 2019, when in the US, you had more females in the workforce than you had males. And then, you know, fast forward 12 months to, you know, 2020, December 2020. And, you know, I mean, I don't want to focus on a specific month, but I think it just highlights this gap so well, is when you had, you know, 140 people losing their jobs, and 100% of those 140,000 people were women, and were women of color, and were Black women. And that just shows that actually how the labor is distributed is not sustainable. So we do, so instead of making our people redundant, and our, you know, females and Black females and you know, women of color, or, you know, in any other way marginalized and underrepresented communities, making them redundant, and then on the other hand crying out about not being able to access diverse talent, and putting and you know, throwing dollars at diversity initiatives to get more diverse talent in. But actually, you've had this diverse talent all this time, and all you've had to do is invest to reskill and upskill them, so they're not in these vulnerable positions. So when a crisis hit, they're the first ones to go out of the building. And I think, you know, and again, it's not really a positive spin, but what I'm trying to say is there is a lot of opportunity for us to address these skill gaps, improve digital literacy, distribution of technology, and ultimately ensuring the participation of a more diverse, a participation in labor from more diverse communities.
Absolutely. Yeah,
excellent points. And Amanda, I want to take it to you to close here as we wrap up, and maybe go ahead and finish your previous thought if there's a specific point you want to make. But then what I want you to close with is, we can point to countless gaps that exist. And innovation, in my opinion, continues to add more gaps and widen the existing ones. And so how do we leverage diversity and inclusion to perhaps stop creating more gaps and close the ones that we have?
Yes. So, Bema, you know, said quite a lot, and they are so useful. I would also just say that, you know, in order for us to foster this, there has to be a conscious awareness in growth. We need to understand that growth is going to be very inclusive. It has to be inclusive. It shouldn't just favor one particular status or one particular gender and all. We should be able to contribute, you know, solely to it. You know, for example, you see, you know, the world, especially Africa, last week everyone was happy, so happy. What happened? The director general of the World Trade Organization happened to be the first African, number one, and the first woman. Now, it's not like, oh, we know her directly, but it was a conscious thing that, hey, if this woman can, you know, emerge to be the director general, therefore I can be the next person, or someone else can be. She made us understand that you, when you dream it, you can be it. So it's about this economic growth, because once we start to be inclusive in all of this, whether people living with disabilities or whether it's the female, male, or, you know, whatever, we can actually find out that the growth that we crave for in technology is going to be very sustainable. And it's also ensuring that the skills that we need for the future, we are going to be equipped for it. So it's we really covered quite a lot.
I guarantee you, this is one of a kind. So, Sean, you're back. Amanda, get going. Wherever you were, you were doing fantastic. So,
okay.
I'll stitch it back together. No worries.
Okay. Okay. So let's just consider having growth as being inclusive, you know, because enough of this mentality or this orientation of, oh, the rich keeps getting richer, the poor is getting poorer. It's not about wealth. Now, it's outside of wealth. It's about the knowledge. It's about the skills. You know, we get to see that, oh, skills, maybe if people are data scientists, we find out that they are from a particular region in Nigeria. That's not meant to be it. We need to, you know, diversify a bit and, you know, cut out from this wrong narrative. So, well, I think that's all I have to say. And I really...
And, trust me, it's not little. It's absolutely not little, because, and I'm going to wrap with this this very bumpy road of recording this podcast, and I hope our audience stay with us despite that. But the points that you both made are excellent, are a vision for the future. And the Nigeria example, I think is the example of many, many, many other parts in the world that are experiencing this not equally distributed technology. And I have to say, Amanda, the idea of the people that inspire you, either is a mentor or is someone that you see succeed, as you say, you know, people were happy in Nigeria a week ago. It's what we really need, because passion, I feel, it's the fuel of genius, the fuel of wanted to know, the fuel of wanted to become someone, and knowing that you can. And I think that's our biggest job as communicators, is to tell people, look, you can be that person, but how can they be something that they don't know that they could be? So these examples are extremely, extremely important. And it's a big conversation. We started from the war, and we went with hope and inspiration. So definitely much more to talk about in the future.
Wow. Let's all dream and not give up on our dreams.
Right? Yeah, true.
Yeah, and may technology be part of that.
Technology serves us, not the other way around as well.
Exactly, exactly. Ultimately, we are the one. They create technology. So for the people listening, we'll have some resources, way to connect with Amanda and with Baiba. And we hope you share these. We hope you participate, leave comment on our social media. And for you too, hopefully next time we talk, and there will be a next time for sure, we'll have an easier technology that is going to help us instead of putting obstacle in front of us, but we made it.
Excellent conversation.
Yeah.
And really appreciative of both of you calling, dialing in from all over the place, and and giving us hope and a reason to dream. So thank you, Amanda and Baiba.
Yeah. Thank you, Marco and Sean. Thank you so much. You two are so amazing.
Thank you so much for having us. It was a, you know, really beautiful conversation. I appreciate your time.
RSA Security.
offers business-driven security solutions that provide organizations with a unified approach to managing digital risk that hinges on integrated visibility, automated insights, and coordinated actions. Learn more at rsa.com. Black Cloak provides concierge cybersecurity protection to corporate executives and high net worth individuals to protect against hacking, reputational loss, financial loss, and the impacts of a corporate data breach. Learn more at blackcloak.io.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Cyber Society Podcast. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share itspmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.